south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Okay, let's try not to hurt anybody's feelings today, okay? But first, some COVIDiot vaccination facts you need to know. Which one are you going to take? Well, these facts might help you pick your COVIDiot vaccine poison. First, the Pfizer vaccine. Did you know they paid $4.7 billion in fines? That's $1 billion in fines for false claims and drug and medical product safety violations, along with taking kickbacks, committing off-label illegalities, as well as bribing doctors and government officials. Now, after hearing all that, you just might want to take the Moderna COVIDiot vaccine. Although you should know they've never, ever brought a vaccine to market. This will be their first. Didn't your mom and dad ever tell you should never buy the first of a new product? You know why? Because they haven't worked the bugs out yet. So this is their very first shot at it. Pun intended, despite having 9 other vaccine candidates, none of which made it through phase 3 clinical trials. Yeah, right. Doesn't that inspire confidence? So then maybe you want to select the Johnson & Johnson COVIDiot vaccine after what you just heard about Pfizer and Moderna. I mean, really, who wouldn't want a comforting jab from Johnson & Johnson, the baby powder people? By the way, they've also paid billions in fines. In fact, right now they're involved in thousands of lawsuits for putting toxic and or dangerous products on the market, including drugs, shampoos, and medical equipment, and most recently, asbestos-contaminated baby powder. You got that, all you mommies out there? So then maybe we're just better off taking the AstraZeneca COVIDiot jab, though. Don't tell anyone, but the use of their vax has been suspended by 24 European countries due to severe lethal adverse reactions like blood clots and aneurysms. Oh, and remember, the FDA approved all those products they're being sued for. Yeah, right, so much for FDA approval. They're bought and sold, too. Then there's always the Chinese COVIDiot vax. Just never mind, they've got a terrible history of putting out contaminated food products and dog food that killed countless Fidos. Then again, in China, dogs can be man's best friend and man's best meal. Now, if any of that gives you pause, there's always the Russian Sputnik COVIDiot vax. But not to worry. Jeffrey Epstein's buddy, Bill Gates, Dr. Fauci, and the WHO insist you're in safe hands. Oh, and by the way, did you know all pharmaceutical companies that are producing the COVIDiot vax have been given a waiver by the U.S. government? It states they cannot be sued or held liable for any deaths or adverse reactions. So then who do you sue if grandma dies? The U.S. government, of course. So the taxpayer, that means you, take on the burden of any lawsuits. So just remember, drug companies producing the COVIDiot vaccines have zero liability for any deaths or adverse reactions. Man, such a deal. Wouldn't you like to have a company that had so much leverage in Washington, D.C., Congress gave you a get-out-of-jail-free card no matter how potentially dangerous your product is? Of course, you know what that means, don't you? They knew all along there were going to be adverse effects and deaths. Because if they knew the drugs were safe, they wouldn't have lobbied so hard for that waiver. But you knew that already, right? By the way, I was talking to expat Eddie the other day. He's on the same page as we are all the way. I said, Eddie, you going to get vaxxed? He said, hell no. I said, you got a plan to get out of it? You do travel so much. How are you going to get that so-called COVIDiot vaccine passport card? He said, Johnny, here's my plan. I'm going to go into one of the clinics down here. And when they call my name and I go into that little cubicle where the nurse is supposed to jab me, as she prepares the shot, I'll take out a $100 bill and tell her, look, how'd you like to make a week's salary? Just sign that card and save the shot for someone else. And if she balks, I'll pull out another $100. And if she's still resisting, out will come another $100. Remember, nurses down here only make about $400 a month. So if you're up to $400, you're giving her a month's vacation pay. I said, Eddie, that's Occam's razor. The simplest solution is often the best. Now, of course, that can easily be done here in Latin America. But remember, most nurses probably will not speak English, so you'll have to know some Spanish. But I'm nearly 100% certain you won't be able to pull that off up in the States. Nurses would be thinking if they get caught, they'll lose their jobs. Even if you started out with a big money bribe, like $500, even then the nurses might think it's some kind of a trap. Besides that, up in the States, there are cameras all over the place. A big deterrent. But with luck, you might have a nurse that's on board with not getting the vax, and she might look the other way. A lot of nurses and healthcare professionals are against it, you know. Bottom line, though, is everyone has their price. Oh, and expat Eddie says, the beauty of it is if the nurse doesn't go for it for whatever reason, he'll just take a walk and go to the next COVID-idiot vax clinic. Anyway, he's going to keep me posted, so I'll let you know what happens. Oh, and one last thing. I said to Eddie, if other gringos and expats want to use that technique and they don't know Spanish, what do you suggest? He said, just go into your cell phone translator and type this in English. I don't need the vaccination. I had COVID a while back. I test negative now. I have immunity. Here's $100 for filling out the card. But don't give me the vax. It will be our little secret. Then you translate that into Spanish, and when you walk in and sit down and she starts preparing the vax, you show her your phone and see her reaction. But don't forget to wave that $100 bill in her face. Now, of course, Eddie said that little statement in your phone might be a little white lie, but then again, maybe it isn't. Look, how many of us really know if we've had COVID or not? Since a huge percentage of the population who get it don't even have any symptoms. And once again, I'm not telling you to do anything illegal. I'm just reporting on what so many astute gringos and expats have in mind regarding the COVID-idiot facts. Which brings us to an email from the Conundrum Kid. Yeah, that's how he signed it. The Conundrum Kid. He says, I've got a problem, Johnny. I want to get out of Dodge in a big way, but my wife just won't go. She says it's the kids, the grandkids, the health clubs, the coffee clutches with her friends. That stuff's her life, and she just will not see the light, no matter how terrible things get. Now, my wife, and we get along and I love her, is reasonable, except on this subject and the U.S. government in general. She's one of those who says the USA has always been a special case. Man, I've heard that before. She says the U.S. is tough. It has a 200-plus year history of facing tough choices and getting things done. She's a church-going lady, too, and says that the USA is God's chosen country and all that drivel. I'm stumped. What's a guy to do? What am I supposed to do next? He said, Johnny, she's no dummy, and I presented all the facts to her. She's getting sick of me talking about it. Her problem is, she's a lifelong Democrat and still has faith in the system. I've told her the facts, that the bottom line on the so-called war on terror was a couple of $1 trillion and counting, and we've gotten nowhere. We've made things worse. It's money down an ever-flushing toilet. She knows we spent a couple trillion on the war on drugs, down a forever-flushing toilet, too. And Johnson's so-called war on poverty? Another $2 trillion and counting. That money also down a perpetually flushing toilet. I told her how the feds in Washington and the Federal Reserve are the real criminal mismanagers of money and how they are the ones that twisted capitalism into crony capitalism, and now we're in economic uncharted territory. I explained to her how the Federal Reserve, which was created in 1913, had only two missions. One, to stabilize the currency. Two, to stop financial panics. Instead, under their watch, it couldn't have gone worse. The U.S. dollar's lost 97% of its purchasing power since 1913. And when I heard you mention, Johnny, that they've got 200 pea-brained economists on the job at the Fed, it's just sad how clueless they are. A regular broker would have gone to jail if he lost a fraction of that much of his client's dough. They make even Bernie Madoff look like a financial genius. Incredibly, the Federal Reserve has managed to destroy 97% of the U.S. dollar's value. And yet when a Fed chairman like Powell goes on CNN or the media, all the financial markets hang on every little word he says. And then for the next 12 hours, every talking head in the media does a replay of soundbite after soundbite, treating him like Moses coming down from the mount. So, Johnny, I've explained to my wife that lawmakers are the absolute worst money managers and investors of all time. They're like retarded adolescents who just won the lottery. The question is, why are they so bad at money management when that's all they've got to do? That's their job. I'm certain it's because they're spending and creating other people's money and not theirs. And job number one is to follow the party line so you can not only keep your job, but your bosses can retain their license to steal. And now Biden wants $3 trillion more for infrastructure, though 3/4 of it will go for pork, as usual. Even so, what congressman would vote against an infrastructure project? Everybody wants their roads and bridges fixed, right? And we all know the government is so good at fixing things. I'll shut up now, Johnny. My wife's sick of me talking about it, and I don't want to sicken you, too. My wife's told me that I'm no fun to live with anymore. And I'm offering a great solution. Let's get the hell out of Dodge. So, Johnny, that's my dilemma. I went out in the worst way, and she doesn't want to go. Any advice would be greatly appreciated. Signed, The Conundrum Kid. All right, kid, thanks for that. And you know, I've gotten many emails in a similar vein, where one person wants to get the hell out of Dodge in a big way and the other doesn't want to go. Well, there is a simple solution besides breaking up the relationship. You come on down, one or both of you. Get your foot in the door, meet some people, get a network going, maybe even get a cheap long-term rental set up. Get that residency started. The clock will be ticking on that. Then just pop down here for a week or two, once or twice a year, just to maintain your network connections and do some exploring. Then you'll have a nice escape hatch when things get so bad that even your wife can't take it anymore. Just have a plan B in place when that eventuality comes, because you know it will. And if he or she has objections to even that simple plan, because your significant other's so firm about not going anywhere, just tell her it's like an insurance policy. Look, everybody carries fire insurance, right? But almost no one's ever met or known anyone who's had their house burned down. Unless you're one of those idiot celebrities in California who live in that forest fire zone. Man, talk about stupidity, huh? The house burns, they rebuild. It burns again, they rebuild again. Isn't that one of Einstein's definitions of insanity, you know? Doing the exact same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome? So, unless you live in California, I bet you don't know anyone who's had their house burned down either. All right, moving on. Now for a crazy boots-on-the-ground story that can only happen here in Latin America. Here goes. There's a gringo expat friend of mine from New York who's been living down here in Latin America for about 2 years now. He's part Italian and his dad born in Spain. So he does speak Spanish pretty well. So for him, that move to Latin America was as easy as could be. He's not only got the gringo advantage, but his Spanish is perfect. In fact, he's got that high-class Spanish from Spain. Yep, I think I may have mentioned that before. It's very easy to detect an accent of a person who learned their Spanish in Spain or comes from Spain. It's on par with Americans and Brits. We can tell someone from England in a second. And even a London Uber driver from Brixton, to us Americans, sounds upper class, a cut above. You know, old world culture and all that. It's a strange kind of stereotype, but it's there. You know, that was one of the reasons back in the 60s the British invasion took off in such a huge way. The accent British musicians had is like the gringo advantage for us. A British guy or gal in the States automatically gets 2 points added to his 10 score just for the accent. Even though in London, like Chicago and New York, there's some very terrible neighborhoods you'd never want to walk through. One of them being Brixton. That'd be like the district where the Cabrini Green projects are in Chicago. Someplace you'd never want to just take a stroll through day or night. So even a guy living in a council flat in Brixton, that'd be welfare public housing. If he were to come to the States, his accent alone could open more doors than yours or mine ever could. Just ask any American young lady what she thinks of a guy with a British accent. Yeah, I know. There are a variety of different British accents, too. Just like in the States, there are many accents. But Americans, we're not very discriminating about British accents at all. We just kind of lump them together. However, if you live in the UK, and I lived there for 2 years, you'll hear a dozen different accents. By the way, the British are very classist about the way a person speaks. They'll stereotype and judge you instantly as soon as they hear your accent. Anyway, my gringo buddy from New York, who's got perfect Spanish from Spain, when Latinos hear his accent, it opens doors too. It's funny though, Latinos here in Latin America will always tell you that people from Spain have an uppity attitude. They're snooty, superior acting, and condescending. But when they run into him face to face, they defer to him and sometimes even give him the royal treatment. But behind their backs, they're always dissing him. That's the difference between Americans and Brits. If you know an actual Brit, people are drawn to him because of that accent. There are not many of them around either, so that exclusivity is an attraction too. Thing is, though, we don't diss them behind their backs like Latin Americans diss Spanish people. Now, that's the kind of thing you only pick up on if you've been living down here a long, long time and you speak a little Spanish. Anyway, that buddy I was telling you about from New York, he used to be a Rasta man, had real long dreads, and apparently he was a martial arts and yoga instructor up in New York. So I guess when he was doing his workouts and fighting, he tucked those dreads up under a hat. Otherwise, his dreads were down to his waist. Now, I first met him down here in Latin America, and he had no dreads at all. I had no idea he'd just cut those dreads a couple of weeks before I met him. Down here, he's a pretty active businessman. He manages some high-end resort properties, and he has a couple of small ladies' clothing stores. So anyway, we're sitting at a little cafe restaurant yesterday, and he was showing me some pictures on his phone of his family up in New York. And I said, wow, who's that guy with the mega dreads? And he laughed. He said, that's me. I said, no. He zoomed in, and sure enough, it was. I said, but you look so clean cut and straight. What's the story on the dreads? Now, he's a 40-something guy and has a couple of kids up in New York. They're adults and on their own. And here's what he told me. He said a while back, one of his kids had some bad health problem. It wasn't looking good. They pretty much exhausted all conventional medical effort. And he, being Italian and Spanish, went the entire Catholic school route like I did, though a truly fallen Catholic as an adult like me too. Anyway, since things weren't working with conventional medicine, he said there was only one thing left. He went down to the Catholic Cathedral, had a sit down with the big man upstairs, and here's how he tells it. He said, I made a deal with him. I said, if you help me out here with my kid, I'll cut off these dreadlocks that I love, that are my trademark, that I've been nurturing for 20 years. If you help me out, I'll shave my head, shave it all. And surprise, surprise, his kid recovered. So, to keep his end of the bargain, when he heard the good news, he cut all those dreads off and put them in a plastic bag, got in his car, and drove to the cathedral. Unfortunately, though, he said he was so excited, so amped up, that when he was stuck in traffic at a red light with a bunch of motorcycles weaving and bobbing through traffic in front of him, somehow, he says, and to this day he doesn't know what happened, somehow he lurched forward and rear-ended two cops patrolling on their police motorcycles. Well, naturally, he got the cold sweats and knew he was in big trouble. He pulled over to the side. The cops read him the riot act, said he committed a grave error. He was going to jail. Of course, in no time, there was a huge gapers block, people crowding around trying to get a peek. The one cop rifled through his car and found that hair. The other cop frisked him and took his wallet. He had about 300 bucks in there. My friend said the cop stealthily pocketed the whole thing. After all, even down here, everyone's got cell phones and they're filming everything. So when you bribe cops these days, or try to bribe them, they're aware someone could be filming, so they're ever so cautious to keep the transaction out of camera range. Last thing they want is a bribe situation to go viral on YouTube. Anyway, only then did my buddy get a chance to open his mouth. And when he told his story with that pure Spanish accent, the cops had a complete change of heart. And guess what? They gave him a police escort to the cathedral. And he walked in, knelt down with his bag of hair, completing his end of the bargain, he said. When he finished the story, I asked him, does that mean you're a believer now? He said, well, I don't know, but I am hedging my bets. Then he said, a true believer just might think there were two miracles performed. One for my kid and one for the cops. And I said, yeah, but what if you hadn't had $300 in your wallet? I guess we'll never know. So what do you think? Oh, and by the way, a couple of shows ago, we were talking about all the garbage we humans produce and all the plastic in our water and food supply. Mostly due to plastic bags, containers, and bottled water, sodas, etc. Worse yet, when we microwave food in plastic, not good. The odd thing is that all of these great inventions have secondary consequences that people don't realize until years or decades later. Take, for example, the first commercially successful mass-produced disposable paper cup, invented in 1907 by a guy named Lawrence Llewellyn, a Boston lawyer who was concerned with the spread of germs by people using shared glasses and dippers at public water stations. Turns out back then a lot of modern and forward-thinking cities had public water stations with metal dippers, and you'd just dip in, take a drink, and throw the dipper back in the bucket. Imagine the cross-contamination there. You see, back before 1910, there were some municipal water systems, but they didn't have enough pressure or volume to pressurize a lot of public drinking fountains or bubblers. So people would just continuously put a dipper into municipal water tanks and take a sip. So in 1907, a Boston lawyer got a patent on a paper cup called, you may have guessed it, the Dixie Cup Company. By the way, the woke and BLM crowd wants to have the name changed because, you know, even though it had nothing to do with the Civil War or slavery or anything, the word Dixie is now dissed by the woke crowd. So the word Dixie and Dixie Cups is soon to be relegated to the dustbin of wokester history, even though there's nothing racist about it. Same thing happened to Aunt Jemima and Pocahontas. You know, around Chicago in the Midwest, they have a famous brand called Land O'Lakes Butter, and they have a picture of Pocahontas on every box. Well, they used to anyhow. Now it's considered culturally insensitive. Same thing happened to Uncle Ben of Converted Rice fame, which is, by the way, whiter than snow, white rice, correct? Who are they going to replace him with? Uncle Fester? The old bald white guy from the Addams Family? It's funny, though. The only woke people I've ever met here in Latin America are expat gringos, not Latinos at all. Man, you dopey gringos. You got to quit bringing that wokester baggage with you. Just an obvious tip here. The more you're on the gringo tourist trail, the more woke lunacy you're going to run into. Meanwhile, when you're off the gringo tourist trail, there are just no pathetic wokesters to be found. They don't even have a word in Spanish yet for wokeness. Case in point. The Frito Bandito. If you're a boomer or Gen Xer, you saw a million of those commercials. You might even remember he'd sing a song to the tune of the traditional Mexican song, Cielito Lindo. Ay, 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 I am the Frito Bandito. Man, if that ad campaign were around today, wokesters would cancel Frito-Lay products in a heartbeat. Oh, and how about Speedy Gonzalez? You remember him? There was even a hit song in the 60s called Speedy Gonzalez by none other than white bread 50s heartthrob Pat Boone. You know, Speedy Gonzalez is a Warner Brothers cartoon character depicting the stereotypical lazy siesta-prone Mexican. The ironic Speedy moniker is something I've never heard any Latino south of the border complain about at all, nor the Frito Bandito. But wokeness up in the States strikes again, saying the character was an offensive stereotype. Warner Brothers in the States shelved Speedy Gonzalez's films. Funny thing is, despite being worried about the woke culture and the controversy over potentially offensive characterizations, the Speedy Gonzalez character is extremely popular in Latin America. Speaking of how whacked out the woke culture is, did you know that the Hispanic American Rights Organization and the League of United Latin American Citizens have named Speedy Gonzalez a cultural icon, with thousands of Latinos registering their support of Speedy Gonzalez, the character, on HispanicLine.com, an interactive blog post and messaging forum for Latinos. So as the woke culture up in the States bans Speedy Gonzalez cartoons, fan campaigns in Latin America have put Speedy back on the air. That tells you everything. However, Warner Brothers Looney Tunes was so worried about wokester backlash when they put together a boxed Looney Tunes Golden Collection you can buy on Amazon, etc. It's introduced by a disclaimer that states, quote, "The cartoons you're about to see are products of their time. They may depict some of the ethnic and racial prejudices that were commonplace in American society back then. These depictions were wrong then and are still wrong today. While the following does not represent the Warner Brothers' view of society, these cartoons are being represented as they were originally created. Because to do otherwise would be the same as claiming these prejudices never existed." Meanwhile, the wokesters up in the States, almost all of which are non-Latinos, go figure, huh? Abhor Speedy Gonzalez cartoons. However, things are completely different south of the border. In fact, in March 2021, Los Angeles Times columnist Gustavo Arellano, a Mexican national by birth, wrote, "I love Speedy so much. I keep a large painting of him in my home office. His kind smile and brown skin," he says, "takes me back to my childhood and reminds me of where we as Mexicans came from." So bottom line, if you want to see Speedy Gonzalez cartoons, forget about it up in the States. The wokesters have canceled him. But if you come down here to Latin America, no problem. He's an iconic hero. Let's see now. That would be reason 4,836 why you just have to get the hell out of Dodge. All right, speaking of emails, I get emails here and there asking me about racism in Latin America. I'll tell you what. They've got all the isms here. They got racism, sexism, classism, socialism, and communism. But one thing I've noticed throughout Latin America, there's very, very little ageism. They treat their old people very well, and that's because they usually live in the house with the kids and grandkids till the end. They're rarely shoved into nursing homes or adult care facilities for reasons of money and tradition. They have nursing homes down here, all right. Though I don't know a single Latino or Latina that's got their grandma or grandma packed up and sent away to one of those places. Why would they when there's a tradition of grandma living at home? And if she's too feeble and not quite housebroken, people just hire a live-in nurse for her or caretaker. The cost, generally between $200 and $500 a month, depending if you're paying room and board, which you probably will, and if she's a real qualified, graduated, diploma-toting nurse, or just a nice lady whose job it is to take care of old people. Down here, you know, they've got all the various types of nurses. They've got LPNs, regular floor nurses, cardiac nurses, geriatric nurses, OR nurses, trauma nurses. So anyway, people respect their elders, and ageism's not much of a problem here at all. Now, as far as racism, I've noticed in places like Honduras, Dominican Republic, and Venezuela, a very minimal amount of racism. Though right next door, Costa Rica seems very racist. In fact, up to the late 70s, a person from the mostly black town of Limon, Costa Rica, had to have a reason, even a written excuse, to go to the capital city of San Jose. They actually had a roadblock and a guard shack where they'd stop you as you were going on the maiden road to San Jose and ask you what your business was there. You won't read about that, and you probably won't be able to look it up on the internet either. That kind of info seems to have been whitewashed, but I used to play in a rock and blues band in Costa Rica for a couple of years, and the lead singer and the guitar player were both black from that town, Limon, and they both told me the same story. Now, as for the rest of Latin America, there's not much racism when it comes to black and white at all. Maybe it's because most all black people in Latin America don't consider or even call themselves black. If you call them that because they look like blacks up in the States, they'll correct you and say, nope, they're moreno, not black. That just means tan skin Latino. In fact, that's how they list their skin color on their passports and cedulas. Moreno, not black or negro. Though Latinos will say that Haitians are black because they're very black. there's very little actual black and white races. It's true that the wealthier classes are whiter and lighter, and the poorer classes darker and tanner. So it would seem there's educational and institutional racism, though you don't see it face to face on the street. But a heavy dose of racism does exist between Latinos and indigenous people, the original native tribes. Still, 500 years later, you'll notice that Latinos that have European mixed ancestry, they don't mix or hang out much at all with indigenous people, who are definitely the much poorer classes. And the ism that really prevails down here is classism. Turns out it's very difficult to break out of the class you were born into unless you're a smart kid and went to college or started a successful business, or if you're lucky enough to be born with great looks. Then you can marry on up. That can happen. Now, speaking of racist countries, recently there have been two big surveys covering different aspects of racism worldwide. The findings cover the responses of over 85,000 people from 61 different countries, where they ask broad questions like, for example, would you like or dislike having people of other races as next-door neighbors? And they ask things like, have you seen or experienced racism yourself? This is a huge study that ranked 61 different countries. And for all of you who think the U.S. is irredeemably racist, you gotta hear this. Country number one on the racism scale, the worst, India. Number two, Lebanon. Number three, Bahrain. Number four, Libya. Number five, Egypt. Six, Philippines. Seven, Kuwait. Eight, Palestine. Nine, South Africa, where they've been under complete black rule for the last 25 years. 10, South Korea. 11, Malaysia. 12, Nigeria. 13, Iraq. 14, Kyrgyzstan. Number 15, our first Latin American country, Ecuador, with its huge population of indigenous people. Remember what we were talking about? Number 16, Algeria. 17, Pakistan. 18, Yemen. 19, Hong Kong. 20, Russia. Thailand, 21. 22, Cyprus. 23, Turkey. 24, Morocco. Hey, did you notice that not one Western European country showed up in the first 25? And only one Latin American country did? Ecuador? Neither, all you whiners out there, did the USA. So listen, here's what I'm going to do. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you the link to this article. Check it out. The pictures and the graphs, too. And the next time you hear some fool whining about racism in the U.S., you can show him these facts. Based on the responses of 85,000 people from 61 countries. Then again, some people don't like facts. Not when it interferes with their version of the truth.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos. He knows Spanish.